Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Hello and welcome. How are you? We are kicking off another beautiful week here, and I am super pumped to be spending time with you. The Eldritch Moon pre-release is this weekend. I cannot wait. My sister is actually going to be in town with me, and we're going to go to the pre-release this weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm not getting for any specific cards. I'm just really excited to get out there and try this new set and just see what I get and just have fun. I'm just really excited to be playing Magic with my sister. Are you going? I would love to hear how it went. Definitely join the Facebook group and post pictures of your pool. Let us know how you do. I'm really, really pumped to just see what people do, how they build their decks, and we can all pitch in and just see what you have going on. So feel free to jump in there and post your deck. That would be pretty sweet. The Facebook group is also a great place to prepare for upcoming events. Speaking of which, I pulled the trigger and I will be going to GP Portland. I am so excited. Many of you have said that you're going. I can't wait to have a meetup. I'm looking at where and what day and all that good stuff, but there will definitely be a gathering of prodigies that we're going to get together and hang out and just shake hands, see each other in person, talk about magic. It's going to be fantastic. So GP Portland, if you're going, let me know. I cannot wait. I'm definitely looking forward to a meetup, and more details on that will be coming. So super pumped. Before we dive into the interview, I want to remind you of the survey that I have up right now, a semi-annual survey, twice a year. I love to kind of keep my finger on the pulse of what's going on. And this particular survey is super important because I really want to hear from you as to what you're struggling with and how I can best serve you. I want to keep the lights on. I want to keep this show going past the end of the year when I get out of the Navy. And to do that, I really need to know what you need so I can help give you that. So mtgprotutor.com/survey is a place to go. If you have already taken it, thank you so much. I've loved the response so far. And if you haven't yet, it takes 2.3 minutes. I promise. I timed it. It's not long at all. Just 8 questions. Just head on over to mtgprotutor.com/survey. And it would mean the world to me, as well as give the show specific direction. So thank you so much. We have an awesome lineup of guests coming up. Today we have Christopher Walton, and I'm really excited to sit down with him and hear what he has to say. So without further ado, let's dive right into the interview. What is up, everybody? I am super excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest is well known in the Michigan Legacy community. He piloted Blue White Miracles to a top 4 finish at Granby Columbus in 2016. Coming to us from the lovely sprawl around Detroit, let's welcome the one, the only, Christopher Walton. Christopher, how are you doing today?
Oh, the best. How are you?
Fantastic. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Oh, definitely.
Great. Now, all you prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Christopher, the best place to do that is on Twitter. He's at Emperor Top Deck, at Emperor Top Deck. So hit him up, say thank you, ask him a question. And with that, we're just going to dive into what you have going on out there. Is magic all you do? Do you work? Do you go to school? Tell us about what you have going on.
I actually have been moving around the state a lot and had to take a break from school looking for a job. So they didn't really put my profession in there, which was that I put the oaf and loafer. I thought that was pretty clever. But yeah, like I just have been able to focus on magic a lot recently, and that definitely reflected in my finish.
Excellent, excellent. So you're in between life situations right now, and magic is filling that gap, which is amazing because it's one of the best things in the world, I think, to fill, you know, life gaps for sure. So we love hearing stories. We love going back to, you know, the good old days where our guests came into magic. So tell us the story. Take us there. We want to be right over your shoulder with you. When was the first time that you saw or played magic?
I remember being in third grade, which is probably young for most people. And that's really when I saw my best friend at the time playing. I just became really obsessed with it. And I remember he bought me a starter so I could play. And then my mom found out and she thought it was demonic. So she threw away my cards. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't really start playing again until I was in middle school. We had moved and my mom really wanted me to be able to connect with new people. So she let me play the game. So that era was ABU. And then this era was about Tempest. So they really removed demons and stuff like that from the game. So it was a lot more palatable. And so I had fun playing the game with friends and stuff. I remember winning my first tournament was with a 5-color Slivers deck. Had no business winning. I got to reanimate my opponent's Commander Griffin Elvec and kill him with it.
Oh my gosh, I love that card. I mean, well, I remember that card. I should just say it's nostalgic. I don't really love it, but I just remember that card. So I love that you actually said that card. That's amazing. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, I remember everyone just wanted to use that card back then. And my deck had I was a kid, I didn't have money for it. So I remember very vividly winning that game with a turn 5 Sliver Queen followed by coercioning his Commander Griffin Elvec, making a sliver and reanimating it. But yeah, I had no idea what I was really doing with the game until I was about 18. Then I started being able to travel to the PTQs, and I've only played in a few Grand Prix. This is probably my fifth. I day 2'd one, and then other ones, it doesn't always work out, and you just got to keep plugging away at it.
Absolutely. What was that first set? So your friend that got you into it in third grade, he got you a starter set. What was it?
It was either Revised or Unlimited. I tend to remember it being Unlimited, but I didn't have anything worth money, so it didn't matter.
Yeah. Man, like you said, your mom was like, oh, this is evil. It throws out all the cards. Because back in the day, that art, man, you had, all these creepy goblins.
The Unholy Strength Pentagram.
Yeah, exactly. The Unholy Strength Pentagram, that's true, and all this stuff. And it is just a game, but it captures the iconography of, just dark magic and red magic and all this different stuff. So out goes the cards, and then she relinquishes later on when you moved to a new area and wanted to make some more friends. So that's good that she let you back in. And that reminds me of honestly, Harry Potter when it first came out. Bad press is still press, right? When my mom first heard about it, it was because other people were like, oh, did you hear about this book? It's evil and all this stuff. And my mom was like, what? And checked it out. And she's like, this isn't bad. And so, boom, now we know, I'm sure we would have got to it eventually, right? Because that's just a phenomenon. But it's just interesting how things that are so mainstream, I guess, now sometimes start out as being, oh, what's this? And kind of weird.
Yeah. So. I definitely remember looking back, I was even freaked out by some of the arts, the art on Sacrifice really bothered me as a kid. I mean, that's pretty deep.
Yeah, no kidding. And as long as we were talking about a Commander Griffin Elvec, first of all, who doesn't want to play with that? I mean, the name itself is just amazing. He is a 7/5 creature for 6 mana. Commander Griffin Elvec comes into play, sacrifice a creature, and Griffin cannot be blocked except by artifact creatures. Oh, so he has fear. So you have to sack a creature. Wow. A 7/5 for 6 mana that you have to sack a creature. And he has fear. So he's actually not good, but he's just...
I mean, the power creep makes him not good, but back then...
Yes, that's true. 7/5 with fear. I mean, hello. Step aside and let the man come through, right? That's pretty cool. Since you've been, you came in way back in the day and had touches and goes, and then, you said you started knowing what you were doing around 18 or so. What's been your favorite set?
That is a good question. I'd have to say it's probably Tempest or Stronghold or Exodus, somewhere around there.
Yeah, why?
Because that's really where I started to really be able to play the game. And the idea of the dual realities with the Sultari and Dothi over top of the normal world's problems. I really liked that. The art from that time period is so great. The planes especially, and that's my favorite color. And those planes are just so dramatic.
So we're going to take a little tangent right here. What was the Dothi and the what? Can you dive into that a little bit? This isn't a lore cast, but I'm very curious since you seem to know what's going on. Can you share what's going on?
So I don't know exactly what the storyline was, but the Dothi is the black creatures with shadow, and the Sultari are the white creatures with shadow. And there's some blue guys, the Thankos, or I forget how to pronounce it. But so there's 3 creature types with shadow. And all of the flavor text from that, and flavor text seemed to be so much more a part of the game back then, really let you know that there was this war going on and that it was causing a rift. And all of these things really, they drew parallels to cards like the Erratic Portal. I don't know if this was true, but I got the impression that a rift in the space-time of Wrath, the plane that it was on, caused the Erratic Portal to exist or be possible. And people started fleeing Wrath to get to Dominaria, which is where Urza's Saga took place. And that was so cool because you knew that the next block was going to be in Dominaria, the original plane for the game. And
That's cool.
Just everything felt so much more, and maybe it's because I was a kid, but felt so much more thematic back then.
You don't think it's thematic right now?
I think maybe I've gotten away from it. I think with the return to Innistrad that we're in right now, There's definitely a lot of that, but Return to Ravnica really didn't interest me that much. Mm-hmm. I feel like, I don't know, that was just the time for me. Obviously, everyone's going to have their own favorite set, and for me, that's like what really connected.
Yeah, I hear you, because that's really when I came in to Magic. I remember vividly, like you said, those cards, that art. I remember Gerard and the Weatherlight and the crew, like Squee and Karn and Piraj. And like I just remember those characters. And, you know, they had to go and save somebody from Volrath. I remember he was the bad guy. And I remember that time frame because that's when I came in and, you know, I loved it. And I didn't know that there was portals and stuff going on, but it sounds cool. You know, the thematic element for me is very appealing as well. And when I came back into it, I really wasn't following the story, but I didn't really pick up on it either, you know, because I don't think they were really hitting it hard with Return to Ravnica and stuff like that. But recently, I feel they have been hitting it pretty hard, like Zendikar and Innistrad, and it's kind of all being tied together. So very cool.
Then you have to remember that one more thing. The Tempest Block is the first place where Slivers appeared, and the characters of that storyline at the time really had to confront this really alien-looking thing. And, like, it was a big crowd favorite, so... I don't know. There was just so much going on for me. Like, I think my card that has the flavor favorite text comes from that block, too. It's Hatred. And I don't want to misquote it, so I won't go into it. But it's Krovrex going into detail about how much he hates someone.
Let's look it up. So your favorite flavor text is on the card Hatred, which is from Exodus. The picture is a close-up on Griven Ovek, I guess, his face. It says, "I will flay the skin from your flesh and the flesh from your bones and scrape your bones dry, and still you will not have suffered enough." Dang! That is pretty intense.
Yeah, he was pretty upset about something. I don't know what it was, though.
Yeah, no kidding. Pay X life. Target creature gets plus X plus O until end of turn. It's an instant that costs 5 mana, and then you pay X life on top of that. Yeah. Wow.
If you played back then, like, everyone's tournament deck was just based around shadow creatures and that card with Dark Ritual, because Dark Ritual was still considered a fair card. Mm-hmm. And you could just die on turn 3.
Because Shadow unblockable, then you Dark Ritual a couple times and pay some life and smash in and game over. Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's incredible. So we just learned your favorite flavor text, which is awesome. Like, we never dive into that, and because very few people, you know. What is one of your favorite cards?
Oh, my favorite card is hands down Land Tax.
Nice. All right. Tell us what that is for those of us who don't know. What does it do, and why do you like it?
Yeah, Land Tax is a one cost white enchantment, and it says, at the beginning of your upkeep, if an opponent controls more lands than you, you may search your library for 3 basic lands, put them into your hand, and then shuffle your library. So on the surface, it's kind of a benign card. Like, getting card advantage is huge, but what if they're just basic lands? Well, most people just overlook that. They're like, well, they're just lands. But for a control deck or even mid-range decks, like, making every land drop is a huge deal. And I've always been very fond of control decks. And then when you pair that with cards like Scroll Wreck, which is a 2-cost artifact, 1 tap, set aside any number of cards from your hand, put an equal number from the top of your library into your hand, and then rearrange the ones you set aside on top, like, that turns it into real cards and a real engine. And that was my first thing. I think I read in Inquest magazine, and I was like, that's insane. I've got to do that. And so I played that in just about every deck I could throughout high school and whatnot. And yeah, Land Tax is just like, it really punishes people, but people don't seem to know that it's causing them to lose the game.
Hmm. Very interesting. And how about that art, that fuzzy purple pimp hat?
I've always wanted to, like, get a custom playmat or an extension of the art made, but I just have no idea how you do it.
Yeah, like, what's on the outside of the frame? Yeah, that's funny. And of course, like, there's the super fancy Judge promo one that has, like, a...
Yeah, the treasure chest.
Yeah, opening up with all this money, like, pouring out, which is cool. But this guy, he's like, oh, money bags, purple fuzzy hat. Like, yeah, so cool. I have one. Yeah. It's in my EDH deck, so...
I remember being at Grand Prix Columbus. I think it was 2012, maybe 2013. It was a Legacy one. And that was, like, the first event they gave away that Land Tax, and no one wanted it. And vendors were buying them for 5, selling them for, like, 8. And I got one, and I'm kicking myself now for not getting a bunch more than that, because the price tag on that card is substantially higher.
Is it, like, $20 now? I don't even know.
I think the judge foils are like 60 to 80.
Oh, you mean the judge foil one. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, that would be nice to have for sure.
Yeah, I just have the one because my goal was to own one of every printing of Lantax. And I think there's only like a couple I'm missing. And they're not even that hard to find. I just gave up looking.
Yeah, there's like five printings or so and like a Battle Royale set and fourth edition. And
yeah, but then
like
I wanted all the languages on top of that because it's not really a collection if you don't go all out.
Of course not. Love it. Absolutely love it. So Tempest, favorite set, or that block at least. Lantax, favorite card. Sweet, man. We've learned a lot about you and I love this. I love diving into this. So Mr. Emperor Top Deck, got another one for you. What makes Magic fun for you? You've been playing for a long time. You said third grade was your first introduction. And again, touch and go, and then really kind of hit it hard at 18. Why? What has kept you around? What makes Magic fun?
I don't know if it's sad to say this, but like most of my friends come through Magic. And like that's why I'm still playing, I'm sure, is because I have great deep-rooted friendships that I've made along the way. And you know, not everyone you meet playing Magic is the greatest, but the people, like, there's a reason that we all do it, and it's because we want interaction with people, I think. We want a challenge, and it's so much better when you have a group of people that you're competitive with that you also like.
And do these friendships extend past Magic? Like, I mean, you're having a tough time, you have buddies that you can call, you help each other, like, move in and out of apartments type of stuff, or is it just you had that camaraderie of playing the game together and you travel to GPs and all that kind of stuff, and kind of that's where the friendship's at?
There are definitely the friends that are just, we go to events together and we just talk about Magic stuff together, but there's also definitely the friends where they help you find jobs and you introduce them to your girlfriends because you want their approval and they help you move, like you said, and like people that really become a part of your life. And I remember like we did this cookout to like commemorate my top four finish because it was a huge deal in my group of friends. And we just spent most of the time talking about life. And then we drafted the boxes of Eternal Masters and eight. And it was great. Like those were all real friends. And I'm very lucky to have all of them in my life.
Yeah, I hear you. And it's not weird at all that friends come from Magic. Right now, in my mind, I'm thinking of one, my friend Will, that I met through Magic, but our friendship has gone beyond just Magic. Obviously, we get together every chance we get. He lives in another city, and you know we play Magic, stuff like that. But we always talk about how each other's doing and family and whatnot. And that's great that you have those friends that have come from Magic but have extended beyond that. I love it. Absolutely love it. And everyone has a unique journey going through Magic. And part of your unique journey are your highs and your lows, the good times and the bads. I want to touch on two stories. The first one being a low. Your worst Magic moment and what you learned from that time. Can you share that with us?
I don't know. I think there's like two different parts of that for me. One of them was the time I basically tried to quit Magic, which was probably 2008, 2009, coinciding with like the release of Lorwyn. And I remember like I was just done with the game and I got a few numbers put on my collection and no one was really giving me what I wanted. So I decided to just piece it off. And the first thing was I traded my friends things they wanted and they insisted I take more than the cards were worth. And so along the way of trying to get rid of my collection, it was just accruing value and becoming more challenging to get rid of. And so that kept happening until I was like, well, I guess I'll keep playing. But the other thing, like as far as competitive goes, it was actually just a few months ago, maybe 6 or 8 months ago, I was at an open in the Classic and I was locked for prizes and I'm playing Miracles against Rug Delver. And the end of time came up and we played a very close match. And I thought that I had a Jace on board, that I had a Council's Judgment to get the Pithy Needle off of him. And I thought that I was just going to win the game. And I tried to reason with my opponent that like, hey, a draw is not going to do either of us any good. Like it'll kill both of our top eight chances. Would you concede to me? And he said no. And I didn't badger him about it, but I used information that I didn't necessarily have. And I didn't know this at the time, so this was a big learning experience. But the Council's Judgment wasn't in my hand. It was on top of my deck. And I flipped it. And I'm like, hey, like, look at this card. It's going to win the game. You can't win. I know your hand, so and so, so on and so forth. And long story short, a judge gets called, and I get disqualified because I used outside information to try to determine the winner of a match.
Oh, my goodness. And the top of your deck is considered outside information?
Yeah. And I had mixed feelings about that. I'm like, well, the judge was like, you have to play a match of Magic to determine the winner. I'm like, well, there's no way that we could be at this point without playing a match of Magic. But yeah, it's called Future Sighting, which is kind of funny because Future Sight makes an appearance in my sideboard for the top eight. But you can't flip your top card and be like, hey, look at this card. Neither of us know this is here, but you should concede to me based on this information. And so I learned a lot, but that was a huge blow to me.
Yeah. How did you know that the card was on top?
I didn't. I just flipped it. I sometimes at the end of the game.
Oh, okay. So would it have been different if you knew that was there?
If it was known information, I could have used that as part of my case.
Okay.
And it wouldn't have been a problem. But
okay. So like some card effect, I don't know, you scryed or whatever. And so you knew that card was there. That's different than you not knowing what was there and you just saying, hey, let's take a look. Oh, based on this.
Yep.
God, absolutely. Wow, so interesting. Yeah, that whole will you concede to me thing is it's a really fine line, you know, to walk. We had Jared Silva on the show a little bit ago, and he's now level 3, but you know, used to be level 5 judge before they rearranged everything. And yeah, and that's a slippery slope, you know, because it happens, and sanctions in place like keep people from doing, you know, like bribes and outside stuff like that. But then again, everybody knows that draws happen, or intentional draws and folding and all that stuff happens all the time. And so it's really, really slippery slope, really interesting. So that's, like you said, it's a big learning experience. And unfortunately, you know, it came on the back of a disqualification, which is a big bummer because so you were locked for prizes and being disqualified, you lost everything.
Yep, I lost prizes and it kind of stung because my opponent was like fishing for a win, like the whole match, which just like trying to scum me on rules and things like that.
Oh,
but
really?
What ended up happening is he had to take the draw still. So there's a little justice to it there.
Got it.
Oh, he definitely had a better knowledge of the rules than I did. And he knew what was supposed to happen. And I just got blindsided by that. I don't hold any feelings about it anymore, but it really beat me up for a long time. That was definitely a low spot for me.
So diving into that, because I'm very happy to hear that you've moved past it. How did you do that? Because holding on to it doesn't do anybody any good. It's good to learn from those experiences, but then if we hold on to like the negative emotions, especially harbored towards another individual, that is only going to fester in you. You know, he's off living his life, doesn't even, you know, whatever. Like, and you're the one that's left with these negative emotions. So what did you do to kind of move past that and be left with the learning point that you were, you know, so eloquently shared with us?
So I tried to get past it very quickly, and I filled out, when you get disqualified, you have to fill out a statement saying what happened. And I expressed like my discontent with the results. And I'm a level 1 judge too, so I've been in that position where you have to disqualify someone. It's not a great position to be in. And I knew that I was very upset about it, so I tried to remain as civil as possible. Because when you're removed from a tournament, it's not great for anyone. Anyway, we basically immediately left because I was the only person in my group that still had hopes of prizing that tournament. And it helps that like the tournament was in Indianapolis and I live in Michigan, so I had a long drive to get over it. And it did bother me for a while. Like everyone says, you know, you just got to leave that stuff behind. And it's a lot easier to do it than to say it than it is to do it. Mm-hmm. And I just kept playing Magic, and I talked to people about it. I'm like, don't let this happen to you. It was embarrassing. It was my fault. It wasn't something I was proud of, but it was something that I could work past. And other friends of mine have been disqualified for things like inappropriately determining a winner through like coin flips or something like that.
Oh man!
And they're in the they basically felt the same way. Like, yeah, it's awful, but you can get past it, and it's definitely something that I'm not going to repeat.
Yeah, for sure. And then backing up to 2008, 2009, why did you want to get out of Magic in the first place? You said, oh, I was trying to sell everything and I couldn't, so I stuck around. But like, why were you in that position in the first place?
So it wasn't necessarily that things were awful in my life. It was just like, I thought it was time. Like the local gaming store that my friend had opened was closing, and most of my friends seemed like they were moving on. It just felt like the right time. And legacy spikes have happened. My collection is mostly legacy stuff. have happened over and over. And so at that time, my collection was worth several times what I had paid for it. And it was only worth like $3,000. And that was, you know, almost eight or nine years ago at this point. So yeah, it was just, I thought the magic wasn't going to be a part of my life anymore. And the friends I had really anchored me back into it. And it was still something I enjoyed. So I guess, like, honestly, it wasn't something that I wanted to give up. And it wasn't something I needed to give up either.
Well, thank you. Thank you for opening up and sharing those two experiences with us. Like, we learn from other people's mistakes and downs and whatnot. And I do appreciate you taking us there. On the flip side of that coin, though, are the highs and our proud moments. And so I would love for you to share your proudest magic moment to date.
I would have to say that it was definitely the finish that I'm here talking to you because of. My goal has always been to top eight a Legacy Grand Prix. Legacy is my format, and it's, I get to play it every week. It's what all of my friends play, and it's what I've worked so hard for. So I'm normally a pretty stoic, deadpan guy, but when I was locked for top eight after round 15, I couldn't help but smile. I couldn't help but laugh, and I embraced my best friend who I drove down with, and all the people from Michigan that came down. Like, I don't know if I could have been as happy for someone else in that place. I'd like to think I could have, but I was incredibly happy that, like, I'd run cold for like 2 months before that, and it finally, everything finally came together. Mm-hmm. I played a great deck, and I had worthy opponents that I was able to either outplay or outdraw, and it was just a great feeling. I'd say besides that, my best Magic accomplishment had probably been really, it's not a moment, but it's cultivating the Legacy scene in Michigan. I wouldn't say I'm solely responsible for it, but I'd like to think I played a major part in it. And Legacy, to me, is the best format. It's so much fun. There's really no skill cap that on most decks. There's great interactions where, like, the right play isn't always the best play. And you don't really get that with other formats that much. And every matchup has intricacies to it. So really tying back into my other story, being able to have all those people there that were my support, that were like rooting for me, was great because I knew that I'd been responsible, at least in some way, for them being there by lending out cards or giving suggestions on decks or just being like this stonewall. A lot of times I'm like the end boss in the Legacy scene out there. So just being like this opponent that people knew was a challenge to beat, someone who was competent. And a lot of people look for that. And so those are like my two.
That's awesome. I love that. I love how, like you said, you've cultivated that scene around you. And specifically for Legacy, we can dive into this a little bit here. What would you say to someone who is getting into Legacy? Because I hear Legacy and I have word bubbles full of dollar signs that pop out of my brain. And I just don't, I mean, I have friends at my local game store. They're like, hey, you should build Legacy. And I asked my buddy, hey, are you playing Standard? He's like, nah, I don't play Standard. I'm like, why? He's like, oh, I'm saving my money for Legacy, all that stuff. And this is someone who just recently started, you know, Magic. And so they're kind of diving into the deep end, I feel. How do you break into Legacy? And what would you say to a brand new Legacy player to even, you know, wrap their brain around this format?
So that's a complicated question. I've been a big advocate of Legacy since before it was Legacy. It used to be called Type 1.5, which is the worst name attributed to a format ever, but that's what it was. So Legacy used to be substantially cheaper, and you could really make a point that, you know, if you just get into Legacy, you don't have to make that many purchases in the future, and the prices weren't that bad. I remember getting Underground Seas for $40, even, well, not that long ago to me. But the thing was, you could play Standard and you could win Legacy cards. But now the prices of Legacy cards are real numbers. And so for a lot of people, a lot of Magic players, especially people that are just playing FNMs or people that are just getting into the game, like, that's much more of a commitment than you're looking for. And you can't really acquire a set of Underground Seas the way I did, which was I won them in a tournament. And I won them in a Legacy tournament with a bunch of Savannas. So there's definitely a challenge there. Now, I think there was a great opportunity, and that was in February, I think, when Splinter Twin got banned. I know a lot of people in the Magic, in the Legacy subreddit and in my local game stores came up to me and asked me about it, but a lot of people didn't even ask me. They just jumped into Legacy because they could still do powerful things there. And Modern, for a lot of people, like, has a soft cap on it. Like, they don't want things that are too crazy going on there. But for Legacy, like, Brainstorm is still legal, and it's pretty much been said, it hasn't been said, but the bar is pretty much set that this is going to be the Brainstorm format, because people want to cast that card. It's a skill tester, it's very powerful, it's, there's a lot of thought that goes into it, and it's easy to do wrong. So I think that if you have some Legacy cards, maybe you have some EDH cards, like, there are decks that don't play many dual lands. Like, Aggro Loam plays, I think, two Bayous, a Scrubland, a Savannah, a Taiga, and a Badlands. And none of those are blue. It plays Mox Diamonds, which have been jumping up and down. But there, for whatever you want to do, there's a way to do it in Legacy, and that's the great thing. And even if you want to play something monocolored, even though the big events like the Star City Classics and Opens and the Grand Prix aren't putting up results, locally, you can definitely find success with budgeted and monocolored decks. Delver of Secrets is an insanely powerful Magic card. It has a lot of cheap cards that supplement it. True Name Nemesis isn't very expensive. Stifle isn't very expensive. Basic Islands, you can find them in a box. Ponder, Preordain, things like that are all great tools to use with this card. And, like, that's a great way to get into it. It's just, like, pick up the commons and uncommons you want and then work towards the bigger things. But it definitely is a commitment. And if Magic's something you love and you aren't necessarily looking to give it the full commitment that a standard rotation, the standard changes very fast and it is very competitive at some places. So the great thing about Legacy is that if you're a little older and you have a job or you have a family commitment, you can own these Legacy cards or these vintage cards, either one is applicable, and the updates you'll need to do really aren't very major and they're not very frequent.
Now that is an excellent point that I've never heard, you know, articulated so nicely, that by playing a format like Legacy, like you just said, the updates are less frequent. And so therefore, if you play less frequent because you have other commitments such as family and things like that, then it's okay. Like, you know that you know, hey, I only get to play Magic every so often, and you can rest assured that you don't have to update your deck completely when you go back to play because you're in this more long-term eternal format. I think that's a really good point for maybe some of those players who, you know, are in that stage of life and they're not, you know, grinding every week for, you know, Magic, but they still want to play and they still have other stuff. I really like that point. So thank you for sharing that. That's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah. And just to append on that a little bit, there's plenty of places where there's monthly Legacy events and maybe you can find two or three of those in a drivable area. Now, I'm very lucky. I get to play Legacy multiple times per week if I want to. But for a lot of people, that's just like not on their radar. There's a lot of people that are great at Magic that have extensive collections that only play on the weekends, only go to these monthly tournaments and are good and have a great time doing it.
Very neat. Swinging back to your journey and kind of what you've been going through, as you've played thousands of games of Magic and seen so many lines of play, we would love to tap into that knowledge. We, the Prodigies, we love playing Magic. We understand that we can't win every time, but we want to learn every time. And we want to ask you, what is the biggest mistake that you see players make? And then how can we avoid that mistake?
So hopefully this isn't one you hear all the time, but the absolute biggest mistake is casting spells before attacking. People do it in every format. People do it at every skill level that I've seen. I do it sometimes. If you're not casting a spell that's not going to impact combat, the idea is that you attack first, then wait to see if your opponent's going to respond in any way. Every color has responses. And then, especially if they're playing something like blue, like if they respond, then it puts their shields down for counter magic. Whereas if you play something pre-combat, they have perfect information for all of their blocks. They know if it's worth countering because they know exactly what your attack's going to be. Like, I'd say 5% of the time it's correct to cast spells before you attack. And the rest of the time it's just like, draw. The first thing you should do is play your land and then attack and then go to your second main phase.
Totally agree. And I want to hit that point. Play your land on that first main phase, because the more mana you have up, the more options you are representing, giving your opponent less information, or rather more information to digest, which makes their decision-making process even harder. And then when the second main, like you said, that's when you drop your creature that does not affect combat, or, you know, your other spells or what have you.
Yeah, definitely.
Totally. I love that. Thank you for hitting that. That's great. And again, on your journey, the highs and lows and everything that you've got going on and have done, what has been the deepest thing you've learned about yourself from playing Magic?
This isn't pretty, but I've learned recently that I've taken losing a lot worse. And it's that maybe I haven't been enjoying the game as much as I should have. There's definitely great players that don't have problems losing the game, and I was not one of those for a long time. I don't know if I'm one of those yet, but it's something that I was able to identify and something I'm working on. And so I think you can only learn something that needs to be improved upon. And for me, that's something great to know, because as I was talking about earlier, I really want to be this person in the community that people can come to. And if I'm very sour after a loss, then I'm definitely not that person. And you were saying earlier, like, we can't win every game, and that's important to know. This is a game of skill, but there is a little bit of luck in there. And sometimes the best player doesn't win the game, and sometimes the best plays don't win the game. And, like, that's why we play this game, though, because anyone can win.
And so what do you do? Like, so you just said, you know, try and enjoy the game more. I'm thinking of myself. I'm going to put, you know, put myself out there. I have fun and I enjoy the game when I'm winning. You know, I love it. Like, everybody loves winning. I am in that camp where I have a little less enjoyment when I'm losing. So how do we get to the point where we are enjoying the game even when we're losing?
That is a great question. I think it's being empathetic to your opponent. Like, especially when it's someone that doesn't enjoy a lot of success. And those can be some of the worst losses, when you lose to someone that you think is far worse than you. But for them, this is a big deal. Like I said, I'm kind of an end boss a lot of the time. And I sat down across from this opponent in Modern recently. And he was like, you know, I've never won a match against you. You just came off your top four. I'm not feeling great about this. I'm like, you probably got this one, man. And game one, I drew no red sources in my Jeskai Nahiri deck. And game two, he really got me. And that was it. And I wasn't thrilled about it, but I didn't let him know that. And in retrospect, I'm happy that he was able to experience that kind of that success for him. Because for a lot of people, like, beating the nemesis is a big deal. And I know how I felt beating people that have won Pro Tours in my local scene. And I don't think they were that thrilled to lose to me, but I like to think a part of them was happy that I was able to experience that level of success. And so, like I said, it's all about trying to put yourself in your opponent's shoes. Like, sometimes, yeah, maybe they don't draw their card for the turn because they're excited, or maybe they forget how cards work because this is a new situation for them. But I think the idea is that, one, be happy for your opponents, if possible. Two, if you play the game the best you could, just absorb that. Like, you did the best you could, and that's worth celebrating. And three, we play this game because anyone can win. And so that's the takeaway. Like, if it was 100-0, why would anyone enter these tournaments? Why would anyone sit down to play with anyone else? We want the challenge. And with the challenge comes the risk of loss.
My favorite takeaway right there was empathy. Empathy is the key to enjoying Magic, even when you lose. Because, like you said, if we take the time to step outside of ourselves, which admittedly is hard and something that takes practice, and so everyone listening is not going to get there overnight, but if you want this to be part of your life that you work on and improve on, you can get there. And stepping out of yourself and saying, hey, this is a big deal for the other person. Just as much as I love winning, they love winning. And that doesn't mean throw games and lose. Obviously, we're still there to win. But to manage those emotions when you do lose, just remember that you don't want to take away from their experience. Yeah, I love how you walked us through that. And, you know, empathy is the key. There is some luck that's involved. It can be anyone's game for sure. And just good stuff. Thank you so much. This has been great. I love this. This is amazing.
Yeah, I'm enjoying this a lot.
You just topped forward a Grand Prix. I want to touch on your pro status or journey, where you are. How many pro points do you have right now?
Right now, I believe I have 5. I got one for day 2 in a Grand Prix years ago, but I don't think that those stick anymore.
No, yeah, yeah. So every season they reset. And you're headed off to Pro Tour Sydney, right?
No, it's Honolulu, actually.
Oh, it's for the next one.
That Grand Prix was the first weekend of invites for Honolulu.
Okay, all right.
I learned that when Arielax told me, see you in Honolulu.
Yeah, okay, cool. That's interesting. So that will be the next Pro Tour season. Okay, so you're probably not going to lock any pro status this season, but maybe have a shot at it next season?
I mean, I'm going to play Magic and I'm going to test for the event and I'm going to do my best, but that's not really the goal for me, which kind of feels like I robbed someone else that was really looking for pro points of pro points. But, you know, I just went to Columbus to play Magic and I did great. I had a great time. And now I'm going to go to Honolulu and I'm going to play a format that no one can really anticipate yet. And I'm going to do my best and hopefully have a great time. I'm really there for the experience. And if I find some people that will take me under their wing and help me, that'll be great. I have tons to learn, but we're not setting the bar too high. We're just going to feel out the waters on this one.
Well, that's great. I think that you have a really good attitude going into it where, hey, you know, I love this. I'm going to give it my best shot, but I am going in there to learn and have a good time. And I'm not going to freak out about the pro points and put that unnecessary pressure, because we've actually learned a lot in the last few episodes about that pressure that, you know, people put on themselves sometimes artificially. And when people just kind of let it go, that they usually perform, you know, much better. So that's good that you're at that point where you aren't loading yourself with that pressure. You can just go and play Magic. Yeah, it's a different venue and a different format, but hey, you'll figure it out. You'll play test as much as you can and show up ready to go. That's awesome. Absolutely love it. So cool. So that's what you have going on and where we'll, you know, see you next. It's great. We've talked a lot about, you know, Legacy. I definitely love diving into, you know, our guest's favorite format, and we've touched on that for sure. When you are traveling, when you're going around to events, what do you take with you? We kind of love to hear what you have in your tournament bag. Anything spicy?
For large Legacy tournaments, I like to take some of my Legacy swag. The MTG The Source did a playmat, and The Source is the de facto Legacy message board. It's not very well known. MTG Salvation has its own section, but it's dedicated to Legacy, and they did a playmat, and they used some copyrighted images without getting permission, and they handed it out at an event. They were charging for it, but Wizards of the Coast put their foot down on that, and we donated a few dollars to them and got these playmats. And so I really hold it in high regard. It's one of my favorite Legacy collectibles. Pretty much besides that, I either way overpack on clothes or severely underpack on cards that I'm lending out. I don't know if your listeners are familiar with the term barn.
I'm not.
Yeah, a barn is a person that lends out lots of things to other people, the person that has the collection. A lot of pro players or a lot of better players at the game just do not own cards. It's not worth it to stress out about them or hassle over, so you just borrow them from someone else. I have a pretty extensive collection, and I lend out lots of cards. And so I don't know why that term is barn. I doubt it's a positive, but I have a duffel bag full of cards that I begrudgingly carry from event to an event just in case I want an audible deck at the last minute or someone else needs to. So I definitely have a gigantic bag that has way too many cards in it.
Nice. And what's the art on that playmat?
The art on the playmat, let me see if I can do it from memory, because I think it's in my car. It is. It says MTG The Source in the center, and it's blue and kind of a white. And it has images from iconic cards at the time. So there's Tarmogoyf. Mental Misstep wasn't banned for like that weekend that they released it. There was Knight of the Reliquary, Hymn to Torox, one of the arts on that. Goblin Lackey, Force of Will, of course.
So just a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah. They did, Wasteland, Sensei's Divining Top, Swords to Plowshares. So just like all of the cards at the time.
Wow, that's cool. I mean, I can't even find an image of it, so it sounds really cool. Love it. So you take some Legacy swag, a bunch of extra cards for yourself and for others, a bunch of clothes, so that's good. And let's see. kind of wrapping back around to entry level stuff, because we've gone all the way through your journey, all the way up to Grand Prix and your preparation for the Pro Tour, what you take with you. And we talked about kind of getting into Legacy, but what would you say to a new player getting into Magic? Like someone who can't afford to build the most popular deck or to draft every day online, what would you say to these new players? What can they do to really start getting more serious about this great hobby that we have?
So for people that want to get more serious, my advice is a little different. But to people that are new at Magic, my advice is to enjoy the game as much as possible. I think that the enjoyment you get out of competitive play is different than the enjoyment you get out of casual play.
I agree.
And so I would make sure that someone was sure they wanted to step up to competitive levels of Magic, because it really changes Magic. It just isn't the same game anymore. And I think a lot of the times the people that enjoy the game the most are people that do not go to tournaments, because you get to make up your own stories and you get to discover all of these things on your own. And I think that's very rewarding. Now, for people that want to break into competitive Magic, for someone that's just starting out in Magic, my advice is to try everything. And if you can't afford it, try talking to people. People want other people to play the game. They want other people to play with, not just so that they can beat you, but so that they can have people in their network. And like, we all get something out of teaching new people, and we can learn from those people. And like, these are human relationships. They're going to have mutual benefits for people. So for someone that is getting like into competitive Magic, my best advice is to, and this is like frowned upon still, I'm sure, in some circles, but it's to net deck. It is to take an exact list and not change anything about it and play it and play it and play it and play it. And then you can start to see why these choices were made. You play it against all sorts of other decks that you're going to expect, even if you have to substitute cards or proxy them. Like, you want to see why these choices were made, and then you go back and make the changes that fit your play style or make the changes that reflect the new metagame.
I really like that. And one thing that stood out to me was when you said that people, like, the enjoyment you get out of casual play is different than the enjoyment you get out of competitive play. And it's so true. It resonated with me, even though I've never really thought of that before. Do you play casually at all? Is there any time for you that you just kind of hang out with friends and just play and just casually?
I wish I did still. I actually play League at my store right now. I think that's a lot of fun. I wish I could find a variant on League that was longer term. It was something like that, where you just have a sealed deck that you add to over time. I have a cube, but like, the normal cube experience is a little dated at this point. And the idea is that you draft with very powerful cards. Well, my cube is you draft with a card called Myrrh Servitor. It's a 1/1 for one colorless. And it says, at the beginning of your upkeep, return all other Myrrh Servitors from the graveyard to the battlefield. And it's nice. Designed to be a multiplayer cube. So everyone sits down, drafts a deck. You have to draft Myrrh Servitors. There's about 130 of them in there. And then you build a deck with Myrrh Servitor in mind, and all the cards interact in one way or another with Myrrh Servitor. And that's been a lot of fun when I get to do it, because even though I have an idea of what the interactions are going to be, like, crazy things can happen, and it's a lot of fun. And it's everyone sitting down together. It doesn't take as long. Like, no one has to have anything on, like, EDH or Commander. And there isn't a huge skill cap on card knowledge like there is for a normal cube. It doesn't take that long. That's, like, one of the ways. And the other way, this used to be really popular years and years ago. I don't know many people that still do it. It's called Type 4. And it's a gigantic stack of cards. And the rules are, you start with 5 cards. You can cast one spell per turn. And you have infinite mana. And so that's another thing where it's great because no one has to bring anything. I have it set aside. And all of the really powerful cards or really zany cards that are like not efficient enough for Commander or were never good enough for Standard or maybe were good enough for Standard get to find a home there. And so trying to think of a great example is like Jareth, Leon, and Titan of Eternal Masters, a 4/7 for white, 3. You can pay a white to give him protection from any color, so he's almost indestructible. Or, like, you play every Wrath of God effect. If it kills multiple creatures, it goes in there. And you play every overcosted creature and every artifact that doesn't really seem like it does much, like Tower of Calamities out of Scars of Mirrodin, which in this format essentially says tap, deal 12 damage to target creature. And that's another great thing because it's so variant that you can't control what's going on, and it's really a lot of fun for me.
So my thought behind this was, I wonder if competitive players should maybe temper their experience, their Magic experience, with some more casual play. Because I know right now I only play, you know, competitively. Like, I go to Friday Night Magic and I want to win. And when I'm playing throughout the week, it's, you know, play testing and stuff like that. And I just wonder if maybe players like me, if we just have more opportunities to just sit down and play casually, if that will kind of help with the, you know, enjoying the game when we're being competitive and help us lose better, you know, when it does happen. And so that's a thought exercise, and I guess I'll mull over and explore a little bit more.
Yeah, I think that's a great thought.
Well, wow, this has been amazing. All you prodigies out there, once again, we're wrapping up here. And if you want to connect with Christopher, the best place to do that is on Twitter. He's at Emperor Top Deck. So reach out to him, say thank you for coming on the show, because he has shared so many like deep insights and just a lot about himself and Magic. And this has been, you know, one of the better episodes for sure. So Christopher, I want to turn it over to you for one last parting piece of guidance, either something you've already said that you want to emphasize or something new that you want to leave with us here at the end.
So this is kind of a weird story, but this isn't the first Pro Tour I've qualified for. Before they did Planeswalker points, they used the ELO system. And through playing mostly Legacy, the format that I just love, I was able to breach into the top 50 players in North America for total rating, which was how you qualified for events for Pro Tours and stuff. Back then, there wasn't a travel award, so I wasn't able to go even though I was in San Diego. But the lesson from Legacy, and I think that this bleeds over into this story, is that you can really play what you want and get somewhere with it. Like, if you just want to play control decks, like Guillaume Wafatapa, a pro that I admire, he was able to do that even in very hostile formats with success. And it's all about tempering your expectations, making the right calls, and figuring out like what you really need to be doing in that shell. I hope that is something that people can take away from.
Christopher, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. Thank you so much for your time and for sharing your expertise with us. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it has been a blast chatting with you. May you always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Well, thank you very much, Sean.
Thank you, Christopher, for coming on the show. Super pumped to have you. As always, prodigies, you can find the show notes at mtgprotuda.com/Christopher Walton. And that's Christopher with a PH, and Walton just how it sounds, Christopher Walton. If you liked this episode, if you have found any value in MTG Pro Tutor at all, I encourage you to please take the survey. mtgprotuda.com/survey is where you can go for that. Think of it as a really low barrier yet high impact way of saying thank you. If you like the episode, if you like the show, mtgpro2.com/survey is the best way right now that you can say thank you. I do this for you. I love hearing what you're struggling with and then addressing those struggles, helping you overcome it. I want you to be a better Magic player. I want you to have more fun playing Magic. I want you to get the most out of your Magic experience. And the best way that I can do that is by giving you what you need, by addressing the issues that you're facing. And the way that I know what you're facing is through the survey. So mtgpro2.com/survey is the best way to give me your feedback. Let me know what you're struggling with. Let me know what direction you want the show to take so that in the coming months I can tailor content specific for you. I think that's the best way to go about it, is really figuring out what people are struggling with and then addressing it. So I appreciate you for listening. I appreciate you for taking the survey. And I'm super pumped to see anybody who's going to be up at GP Portland. We're definitely going to be putting together a meetup for that, so stand by for more information. And that's going to wrap it up for today. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Sean of the Gathering, and we'll see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.